WQCQ, and welcome to Ham Radio and More. I'm Len Winkler, KB7LPW, and today's show is sponsored in part by MFJ Enterprises, Ken Nichols of Earnhardt Dodge, and W7FG Vintage Manuals, and Amateur Radio Trader Magazine. Today we're going to have as a guest Will Anderson, AA6DD, and we're going to be discussing 6 meters. And we're going to be discussing 6 meter communication because it seems that when we've had open lines and when we've had emails coming in to me and stuff, it seems that 6 meters is very, very popular. We're going to find out why there's so much popularity all of a sudden, or maybe it's not all of a sudden. From Will. Will is, you'll hear, I believe he's obviously from Southern California, where 6 meters is very strong and where they have tons of repeaters, and he gets heavily involved with all kinds of 6 meter operation. We'll discuss that in a moment. Our phone number is 602-678-1234. 602-678-1234. We broadcast out of Phoenix, Arizona, and we certainly invite your participation. That's what makes the show great. I don't have all the questions to ask of Will, and he may not know that you have a specific interest regarding 6 meters or something in the 50 megahertz band that attracts you. And unless we hear from you at that phone number, we obviously don't know what you're thinking. So we encourage your input at any time during the show, 602-678-1234. Now, I'm not going to answer the phone until we put you on the air. So, therefore, you don't have to worry about paying for the call and being on hold for 10 minutes or anything like that, because basically as the phone calls come in and I pick you up, you go on immediately and can ask your questions and talk to Will. Now, again, I want to tell you that if you want to get in touch with me via email, it's very simple. I'm at lenwink, L-E-N-W-I-N-K, at goodnet, G-O-O-D-N-E-T, .com. Lenwink at goodnet.com. And keep those emails coming. I enjoy them. And if you want to send us mail every once in a while, I get from people, it was hard to find your mailing address, and I'm not on the Internet. So if you want to send snail mail, you're welcome to do that. Just send it to Ham Radio and More. And send it to Post Office Box 9219. That's P.O. Box 9219, Phoenix, Arizona. And the zip is 85068, 85068. Now, before I even get into discussing 6 meters and everything, I just want to say hello, Will. Welcome to Ham Radio and More.
Hello, Lynn. It's always a pleasure to be on the show with you and talk about my favorite subject, 6 meters.
Yeah, I know it's your favorite subject. I think I had you on this show a couple of years ago or so. I don't know if you recall exactly when, but it was a while ago. And like I say, you were, not you specifically, but 6 meters was requested, which is why we're doing this show. And obviously, it seems to be picking up some momentum as more and more HF manufacturers are putting 6 meters in their radios as standard features, and there are some standalone 6 meter units coming out, as well as handhelds, which we can discuss also. But before we even get into all that, I just have a sort of a pet peeve I want to discuss. And I posted on the Internet, as I always do, posted on the news groups. This is what I posted. I said, Will Anderson, AA6DD, will be the special guest this Sunday on the Ham Radio and More show. He'll discuss 6-meter DXing, 6-meter repeaters, 6-meter contesting, and anything else you want to discuss regarding 6-meter communications. And then I said, 73, Len, and then the information about the show. Well, you know, this is part of the response will tell you why some people are kind of not really enamored with amateur radio, and some of these idiots on the Internet should be, I don't know what. I mean, look at a response. Hey, are you going to have, and then there's a guy named Carl Stevenson on as a counterpoint guest, telling Will and everyone else listening how they are a bunch of CBers, yakkers, beepers, etc., because they are having fun with radio, doing all these non-technical wastes of times, like repeaters, DXing, contesting, etc. Now, that's a response. So then someone responded to him saying, Will is one of the most technically competent hams there is. I wish the rest of the ham community would put one-tenth the effort Will does into learning more about the radio sciences. His contesting and DXing are done primarily with homebrew gear that he himself designed. He's the technical chair for the Southern California 6-Meter Club. I realize that you are not flaming Will, but instead Carl Stevenson, but I find it so silly that people think that operators are not technically involved. Will's non-technical wastes of time, as you call it, are actually excursions onto the air to prove that his concepts really work. And that's by a guy, KE6ALM Matt Mendelhall. And then here's somebody else that says, I agree, Will is a very smart person. Dave Booth, KC6WFS DM0, his gray square. Never mind. Dave Booth, KC6WFS. So, wait, you have any comments, Will?
Well, I'm getting all embarrassed about all the compliments there. But, you know, the fact is, I love technical stuff. But you have to also enjoy getting on the air. And like it says, the radio sciences is radio propagation, which I go around to all the clubs and help educate people on what's happening and when it's happening, because that's really the part of amateur radio. You know, we have the five basic reasons of being hams as far as the FCC gives us our frequencies. You know, and so far, those five reasons is why we've got it, because we don't have the billions of dollars to buy the spectrum. And part of that is definitely technical knowledge, but it's also communication skills. Mm-hmm. If you don't practice those communication skills, what can you do in an emergency? And part of that communication skills is understanding propagation, so you know what band to go to communicate when you need it. If you had the Mexico earthquake, what band do you go on to talk to Mexico City in order to help people? So what antenna do you use, and what power level is required, and so forth and so on. So those are all skills that, as hams, we should all try to further as far as we can, as far as our own abilities will take us.
Well, I agree 100%. I just think there's so much bickering, it seems like, in the ham community that, you know, it tends to turn a lot of people off, which the last thing we need at this particular state of time in our history of development or whatever of amateur radio is all this infighting and bickering. I mean, I post something so simple and so generic that that it's going to be a show with you, and a smart aleck has to come on there and start bad mouthing, you know, just because people are contesting and stuff, that's bad, or that, you know, if people are technically literate, that's bad, or if they're not, you know, into CW, that's bad. Why can't people just allow this ham radio to be something for everybody, and whatever portion a person wants to pursue in it is fine? Why should we badmouth anybody for doing anything? If someone wants to get a no-code tech license for no other reason but to use model aircraft frequencies, you know, is that wrong?
Absolutely not.
You know,
no, I totally agree with you. We have to have a tolerance, and I don't know the gentleman at all. I don't recognize his call. But, we have to live and let live, and that's the golden rule that we do on ham radio. And I think the vast majority of everybody does practice that.
Yes, I hope so. Okay. Let's talk about 6 meters. When we talk about 6 meters, we're talking about the VHF band?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's VHF, but it has, I call it the twilight zone of the spectrum, because it has many characteristics of HF. In fact, it's the only ham band that every form of propagation shows up on. You know, you have some propagation modes that are VHF or UHF, you have some that are HF, but 6 is this twilight zone that has both types show up there, and they show up isolated. In other words, if you have a sporadic E skip coming in, you normally don't have F layer at the same time. So you can study the characteristics of it. What does it do? Who am I talking to now? Where's the halfway point that must be that E cloud? When does it change? And you can go back and calculate where the E cloud has moved to and how fast it must be moving. And if you were down on HF, there would be so many different skips coming in by different modalities that you wouldn't be able to analyze it. But on 6, each propagation mode is a rarity, and they happen almost by themselves, so you can really study and understand their effects.
Okay, so 6 meters is classified as a VHF band with many, like you're saying, characteristics of the HF band, and some characteristics, obviously, of the higher bands. But it is also the only band in reality that the average no-code tech is able to utilize DX or be able to use DX communications. I mean, on 6 meters, have talked all over the world, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, there's no, unless you're using moon bounce, it's not too easy on 2 meters or the higher frequencies, wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, no, it is the no-code tech's DX band. Now, saying that, I must say that you must put up a very excellent station, and you must be very patient and hone your communication skills, and then you can take advantage of all the different propagation modes that come along and do wondrous things on 6 meters. But it's a many orders of magnitude more difficult to do it on 6 meters than it is to do it on HF.
Okay, well, when I first got into this hobby, I was told, don't go on 6 meters no matter what, because what you're going to do is you're going to be the center of attention in your neighborhood. Every single neighbor of yours is going to be your enemy, because there is no band that will destroy the television sets as well as 6 meters will totally destroy it. True or false, and what is the state of that today?
Well, a lot of things have tremendously changed. Ned said on your program last week, if you have a channel 3, there's no problem. And there in Phoenix, you have no problem. Because what the interference problem is adjacent channel to channel 2. If you look at the video carrier, I'm going to get a little technical here now.
That's okay.
If you look at the video carrier, you have an upper sideband that is almost all the video data, plus another subcarrier that's the color data that goes higher in frequency. And then you have the audio channel. That's how the spectrum of a TV station is like. If you look at the lower sideband, they have it chopped off. But the rest of the lower sideband of channel 2 is actually the 6-meter ham band. So you're literally broadcasting on its lower sideband.
Mm.
And that is what mixes inside the TV sets and puts you inside of channel 2 TV. If the TV set has good filtering in the front end, a high-pass filter, you can totally eliminate the problem. But so many manufacturers don't put that in, even though there's a very old federal law that we got passed way back in 1964, which says the manufacturer has to furnish a filter for you. But the manufacturers said, well, that's fine. Their lawyers said, that's fine. That means anybody asks, we'll furnish it.
Oh, so but they will furnish it if you ask. If you call Mitsubishi RCA or whoever it is, they will furnish you a high-end filter?
That's correct. For the TV set.
And now that's, you're saying that's a law.
That's a federal law. It's still in effect, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they so what if you do call RCA and they say, no, I'm not going to send you one, then technically they're violating an FCC law.
Yeah.
Okay.
Technically, if it's still under warranty, they have to come out and put it on.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes. So that's, like I say, that's the main difference. But today, so many people are on cable. So many people are listening to satellite, mm-hmm. that even where there is a channel 2, the problem is almost completely gone. The problem that's more severe than TV sets anymore is actually the 49 meg cordless phones. Those didn't exist years ago, and those are technically not legal devices. They're supposed to accept any interference and cause no interference. That's the, and it's labeled underneath them. And so when a neighbor comes over, and I've had a neighbor come over a couple of years ago now, because I run a full kilowatt on 6 meters, and say, oh, you're getting into my cordless phone. And I said, is it a 49 megacycle unit? And he said, well, I don't know. I think it is. And I says, I explained to him that that device is not a legitimate radio device for him to use on his phone. It has no federal regulation to be on the air. I said, what you need to do is go out and buy a 900 meg unit, and the problem will completely go away. It's a real high-quality transceiver, these 900 meg telephones. They're like your own little cell phone that you'll have. Same frequency area, same kind of technology. Have a much better range and much better quality, and less interference from other telephones as well, and less likelihood that somebody else's phone will get into your phone, which happens quite often, actually.
Furthermore, cannot be monitored.
It depends on which one you get. If you get the sped spectrum one, you can't monitor it. That's correct.
All right.
And anyway, they're extremely cheap now. They're down to $69 at many, many different outlets now. So that problem is also going away because the 900 meg phones are being mass-produced and are becoming very popular.
Okay, so we're not going to really worry too much if we get on 6 meters today about interference. Okay, now
it's almost non-existent unless you're in a very neighborhood has very small yards. If it's very compact, if you have some elbow room around you, there's no difficulty.
Okay, now let's talk about the different modes that are used. I mean, certainly we're familiar with PAC-TOR and AMTOR and, of course, phone and CW and all this. What is used primarily, or is everything used on a 6-meter band?
Yeah, the answer is E.
E, okay.
All of the above. We really do use all modes on 6 meters, which is a lot of fun. Now, the main DX mode is single sideband voice. And if you get on the band, you should either look for a used Swan 250 or an old Drake TR6 or SB110. If you're good with vacuum tubes and you want to learn vacuum tubes, if you're good mechanics, you can get units like that, refurbish them, and get on the air with 100 watts of sideband. That's the sort of minimum level to be reciprocal to any DX you hear. You need 100 watts and a 4-element beam and a 12-foot boom and get it up about 45 feet, and you're ready to go. Anything you hear at that point can hear you, and you'll be able to work it. There's other solid-state, older solid-state radios that you might look for used out there, like the ICOM 551 and the 575 and the even the ICOM 736 is now showing up used.
That's an expensive rig.
Yeah. I use a Yaesu FT650. Was one of my main radios. I've just recently purchased the Yaesu FT920, which is a top-of-the-line radio, around $2,000. And also ICOM has the IC756 with a spectrum display in it, which is an excellent radio. And we have Kenwood with their TS-570S that has 6 meters on it.
What about their TS-50? That's the 50, or is it the TS-60? One of those is the 6-meter radio. I can't remember offhand.
Yes, they do make a standalone TS-60 transceiver that's 100 watts. It's all modes. Another good choice. The ICOM 706, everybody knows about that. Mark II version is out. It's easier to use. And relatively inexpensive, under $1,000, is the Elinco DX70, the H version. You want the H version to get the 100 watts. And, of course, if all those high-buck radios are out of your means, then you can look for a little adventure radio by MFJ. You want to design up a little amplifier of some sort, maybe out of 4CX250 and take the 10 watts up to 250 watts, and then you're in there with the big boys. Or the 10 tech transverter is available for $98. So that's the kind of units I would mainly recommend, though you do like all modes is the best way to go, because we do have a lot of repeaters, a lot of FM, and a lot of AM.
Now, you know, when you said FM, and of course, this intrigued me the last time I had you on, so I got to bring it up again. In Southern California, you guys have more than 100 FM 6-meter repeaters, correct?
Yes, that is correct. A good seven of them. 70 of them are open repeaters and about 30 are closed repeaters.
Okay, so you have 70 open 6-meter repeaters. Now, do they get a lot of action?
I would say that they're equivalent to what you hear other places in the country on 2 meters. They're not. We have three of them tied together. On those three that are tied together, it's quite busy because we run our net there, and we usually get 50 check-ins on the net when we run it on Thursday nights.
Okay, but you know there are so many places in this country where there isn't even a 6-meter repeater. What makes 6-meter repeaters so popular in Southern California?
Well, I think it's because all our other frequencies are, we have a big enough population density that all our other frequencies are being utilized. The 2 meters is completely crowded. There's no place to put a repeater there. 220 completely filled. 440 completely filled. So you either go to 1296 or you go to 6 meters, and that's the reason.
Well, I'd like to hear from somebody out there, maybe in the New York area, where obviously it's pretty dense. And I'm just curious if there's a 6-meter repeaters up there that are prevalent. I mean, I'm just amazed, floored, that there are over 100 6-meter FM repeaters in Southern California.
That would be interesting to me. I wonder why New York is so far behind everybody else. They really have very little, from what I can tell out here, they have very little 6-meter activity in New York compared to their population density, and I don't know why.
Hmm. Okay, well, the West Coast has just issued a challenge to the East Coast there, and our phone number is 602-678-1234. Now, usually our signal propagates pretty darn good up in New York area, New Jersey, Ohio, the whole East Coast there, and certainly Mid-America. And be interested to hear about 6-meter repeater operation in other parts of the country, which I'm sure Will would be interested in too, as well as 6-meter operations, DX, in general, what you guys are interested in. Now, it's very unusual because everybody is saying they want a 6-meter show, they want to talk about 6 meters, want to discuss that, and of course here we are doing that and no one's calling in, which, you know, is only typical. And our phone number is area code 602-678-1234, 602-678-1234. And on a Sunday, my goodness, the cost of making a phone call has to be so minute if we're on 3 minutes at 60 cents or so. So 602-678-1234. Now, let me take a moment, however, and talk about MFJ. And since you brought up the Adventure Radio, the MFJ 9406, I'm going to talk about it. Actually, I have it on in the background here, and I unfortunately don't have a very good antenna, so I can't probably pick up too much, which I haven't been picking up too much. However, it's very simple to operate. I can tell you if I can do it, anybody can do it. And it does operate very nicely on CW and single sideband. It does put out a full 10 watts PEP. The big thing is the price is really good. I mean, for $259.95 or less, you're able to get a 6-meter sideband radio. It has a super hot receiver. And actually, Will, you know something about this. I don't want you necessarily to give an endorsement about this particular product, but you were familiar with it when it was coming out, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's correct. Rich Littlefield is a design engineer who designed and built that unit. He's a superb engineer, and he really made it very sensitive. And that's one of the most important things about 6-meter propagation. Most of what we deal with on 6 meters is very, very weak signals. You know, HF signals are 50, 60 over 9. On 6 meters for Spraticky and Aurora and Transequatorial and Backscatter and even our first F-layer, when we start hearing it, it really comes in literally under a microvolt. And you need a receiver that can really dig down in there and hear, and he did a superb job of making it do that. It also has a extremely good linearity control. In other words, the linear compression circuit on there gives your audio a lot of punch. I forget what he called it, some syllabolic thing or something. But anyway, that's what he did. And so it has excellent audio characteristics on transmit as well.
Ray actually calls it MFJ's constant current speech processing.
Okay.
So.
And like I say, that's an ideal starter radio. The only thing you'd like to do is maybe find a CB amplifier and convert it to 6 or an HF1 and get the power level up.
Okay, well, I certainly couldn't ask for, and neither could MFJ, ask for a better endorsement. If you want to get into 6 meters, here's a way to do it. Call MFJ at 1-800-647-1800. 1-800-647-1800. And MFJ Enterprises will be happy to handle it for you, and they'll even send you a free catalog if you want, and you can look at this. I mean, it's a beautiful product. And again, that's the MFJ 9406 6 meter sideband transceiver. Now let's go to the phones. I see that we have a couple lines ringing. I hope they're still holding. Let's see. Nope. I guess they got tired during the commercial and hung up. Both lines were ringing and then they hung up. Okay. So why don't you dial back? Remember to leave the phone ringing, because I'm not going to let you sit on hold and cost you money. So I'll pick it up. You'll go on the air. Okay, now you're on the air. Who am I speaking to, and where are you calling from?
Oh, hey, how you doing? My name's Cully. I'm N3HTZ, and I'm in southeastern Pennsylvania. And we do have a very nice 6 meter repeater in the Bucks County area.
It's what frequency is it on?
53.03 with a 131.8 tone. It is the WA3BXW repeater in Yardley, Pennsylvania. That's what it says. And I got to tell you, I had an incident. I work on television for a living, okay? And I had an incident where a ham neighbor blew his neighbor's television out on 6 meters. He tripped the shutdown circuit in the TV, caused the set to shut down, and it's a Toshiba, so the minute the fault was cleared, as in with a sideband transmission, it would come and go, the set would come on again and go off and on and off and on and off, and it would it just blew out the horizontal output, the part that provides the high voltage in the set, and he actually blew out the television. And it didn't do anything to the, I mean, they had heavy interference on their phone and their TV before it went out. And he was just overloading it severely. And we fixed the TV and went over and checked his shack out. Luckily, being a ham, I was able to check into that. And I found that he had a ground that was grounded. His radio was a Drake TR-250.
Mm-hmm.
And what he did was, he ran a ground 20 feet away to a cold water pipe instead of pounding a ground rod through his basement wall right into the soil and grounding it that way. So he was in bad shape there for a while. So
Will, any comments?
Well, first off, SCRs like that are notorious for burning out.
Mm-hmm.
So almost any RF on any frequency could have caused it, or it simply could have been age of the unit itself that can cause it. One of the things that I do myself whenever I buy a TV set is I take my 6 meter HT, Cherokee has a nice one out, the AH50, and I take it down to my Walmart and I go in there and I turn it on and I watch which TV sets go berserk.
See,
and I buy the ones that don't.
Well, I have an ad then myself, and I'm actually listening to you on a TS 690, a very fine 6 meter radio, also HF and 6 meter, very fine, and you guys sound good. But I was just shocked when they called up and the group complaint said ham blew up television, and it actually did affect it enough that it shut the set down and it came up and. And he might have been aimed right at the house at the time.
Well, that sure does define overloading.
Well, and I only had one other ham come to me with a blown TV. He blew out his own TV while tuning up on 15 meters of his 600-watt amplifier. So
right.
It happens.
Well, thank you very much for the call.
And thank you. I listen to you. Try to listen to you every week. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Okay, welcome to Ham Radio More. Who do we have on, and where's your call sign?
Thank you, Len. My call is K1VKZ. Name is Paul. We're calling from Van Alstine, Texas. Just a couple of quick thoughts. First of all, I'm glad you turned off your answering machine, because it was hard to get through
Why only? Oh, you know what?
Yeah,
you're right.
That's right.
You're right.
So you might remember to, if respectful suggestion, you might try to remember to do that before the broadcast.
Oh man, no, you know what happened? You know, I got to apologize because you see, I do have that on so that the phone doesn't incessantly ring because you know when we replay these shows. People call in even though I say don't call, you see.
You're a candidate for the Wiffong Award there, my friend.
Yeah, so but anyway, but today I was in San Diego this morning and drove back to Phoenix from San Diego and just made it to do this show, I want you to know.
Well, another thing, the telephone company will disconnect you after 20 or 30 rings, so be diligent. If the folks can't get through, you know, keep calling because they'll disconnect you after 20 or 30 rings if your party doesn't answer. So stay on it, and you will get answered eventually.
Well, I appreciate it, and now I understand what the problem was
that's why you're not getting a proliferation of calls.
Well, okay, I thank you for telling us.
One thing that we see a lot out here, we're in a fringe area, and, of course, there's when you're in a fringe area like that, a lot of people are using external antennas. They say, oh, I'll put a preamp in front of my TV, and that'll help. And, of course, the gain goes way up. And anything, heaven knows, it could be outside of the passband of the channels or whatever. It doesn't matter. It'll get into those things. So you really got to make sure that you know that these people are all aware of what's going to happen. And you got to try to get along. You got to be a politician, I guess. You got to make sure that you don't irritate anybody the wrong way. Otherwise, you get rocks coming through your windows sometimes. I'm sure Will knows what that can be like. And it can be, it can be handled, but you got to be a little bit of a diplomat and a little bit of a gentle person, go nice and easy with it. And most of the time you can deal with it, especially now that most of the Class C amplifiers are no longer around. Most of them are running linear, and you don't have the harmonic content that we used to have years ago. And it makes it a lot easier, and Will is absolutely right. There's a lot of wonderful activity up there. And also with the sporadic E that's out there, there's a lot of great stuff that can be worked in addition to real long-range DX. You're able to hear stuff that you never dreamed you'd hear at several hundred miles of range that you just never suspected.
Well, according to the current issue of QST Magazine, Emil W3EP says that there was 6-meter E-skip propagation somewhere in the United States on every day of the month except 4 days.
Right. I didn't see that, really.
Yes, that's on page 85 in August 1997 QST.
Boy,
not
that's
the July
good
issue. Yeah, so you know, obviously what you're saying is correct, and here every day but 4 days, that's pretty there.
That's pretty solid. And of course with the frequency being where it is, you can put up an antenna with a pretty reasonable amount of gain, and the elements aren't going to be that prodigiously long. You know, you can a half wave is a lot less than it would be on 20 or 15 or 10 meters. You know, you can put up an antenna with some real ERP, effective radiated power, and you can get an awful lot out of a reasonably small antenna.
Why, thank you.
Have you ever used a quad, cubicle quad affair up there, Will? How does that tend to work for you?
Yeah, quads are excellent antennas. Two, three, or four elements are optimum. Go ahead.
And does that give you a good angle of radiation? Well, it would give you a very low angle, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah, you want as low as possible. That's
yeah.
why you'd like as much height. The normal ionized modes on 6 meters come in at a very low angle. So the better launch angle you can generate, the better chance of working more DX and longer away.
And maybe an image plane under the antenna would help. Maybe something like if you want to put some ground, maybe a ground system under the antenna, that would help bring it down a little more too, wouldn't it?
Yeah, the basic way to do that is just to run, six elements over six elements. If you put up six elements over six elements, you have a real DX array on six then.
Oh, yeah, that'll work. Yeah, you've got an ideal situation, my friend. Sounds really good.
Okay, I thank you for calling.
Well, it's a pleasure, and very 73, gentlemen.
73. Bye-bye.
Very good, Paul.
Okay, 602-678-1234 is our number, 602-678-1234. And again, please let the phone ring. I'll answer it when you go on the air, so don't worry about letting the phone ring. And here we go. Okay, who's calling? You're on the air.
Hello, this is Wayne Robertson from Atlanta, Kilo 4 Whiskey Kilowatt. Good evening.
Good evening.
I have just a quick question for your guest there. He mentioned earlier various kinds of rigs that you can use to get on the air with on 6 meters. And if I've already spent my budget on HF gear and 2 meter gear and everything else, I would be kind of tempted by something like the Tentex transferter or converter. And my question is, would this be something pretty effective or something that might be rather limited and pretty frustrating to use?
I'll repeat the question, then.
Well, could you speak up a little bit, because you're a little quiet, and so Will's having trouble hearing you.
Yeah, the question is about the effectiveness of a transverter.
If a transverter.
With an HF rig, would that be an effective piece of equipment to use?
He wants to know if a transverter is something he should use.
Yeah, Lynn, tell the gentleman that transverters are an excellent way to go. Their drawback is normally you don't have the 100 watts that I consider necessary to be really competitive on the band. So, but it gives you a good dynamic range on HF and usually a good noise break from the HF radio. So as long as the basic HF radio is a high-quality one, then a transverter is an excellent way to go, and then you just have to put an amplifier on it to get the power up. Because most of the transverters are 8, 9, 10 watts or maybe 20 watts at the most.
Okay.
Did you get
that? Thanks so much for the information.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. That opens up a line at 602-678-1234, 602-678-1234. And let's go to the phones again. Who do we have online?
Don Dubuque.
Hi, Don.
K-E-4-I-A-P in Woodbridge, Virginia.
Woodbridge, Virginia. How you doing today?
Good. This is primarily a little plug for MFJ and a question for your guest. The plug for MFJ is I'm running one, and my furthest contact this year was Montana.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you're running the 9406, and you have made a QSO to Montana.
Right.
So that's all the way from one side of the U.S. to the other.
Right.
Now, what kind of antenna array do you use, by the way?
I'm running a 170-watt TE Systems amplifier into a 5-element Cushcraft.
Okay. I knew it was too good to expect you to say that you were using the MFJ 3-element 6-meter beam that they've just come out with. So, but that's okay. Go ahead. I want you to be honest.
Right.
All right. And you enjoy using the radio.
Oh, yeah. It's a great
Excellent.
Radio. I mean, it's one of my best purchases for 6 meters, I think.
Okay.
The question to your guest is, does he have a web page? And if so, does he have any of his designs that he's built 6-meter equipment on?
No, Don, I don't have a web page. There are a number of 6-meter web pages out there in Europe and every place else, and I do have designs on there. There's a 4CX250 design on one of the web pages. If you get into the SMRC web page for 6 meters, it has, you know, those extensions that go out to all the other web pages. So you can do a little research there, and I'm sure you can come up with the addresses for lots and lots of interesting stuff on 6 meters.
I was surfing a little bit before the show from the couple minutes I had, and I did see the SMRC homepage, which is kind of cute. plays some nice music and stuff.
Oh, yeah. my webpage is linked to that one also. So.
Okay.
I mean, they do have a lot of the drawings on there, and I'm just trying to collect as much of the information on 6 meters as I can, because of the fact that that stuff is, I guess, archive type equipment, and you don't see that much out there.
Did you go to the webpage from Equinox, I think it is? I mean, that's the one that seems to have like a million different things. I mean, on that particular webpage, and unfortunately I do not have the address in front of me, but they're talking about 6-meter propagation info, cluster news, Summit DXs, 50 megahertz information of New Zealand, South Africa, Japan, the Netherlands, Australia, Poland. They have, and I don't even know what this is, R1 records on it. They talk about the FT920 that Will mentioned earlier. They have a current beacon list. There's hundreds of beacons on there. 6-meter QSL information, W6 repeaters, Japan clusters, TV listings, D44D expeditions, 706 mod. There's so many things on there. Solar forecast, all this from 6 meters. And of course, they also talk about Smirk.
Yeah.
So that's a gigantic webpage. I just don't have the address in front, but it does say Equinox on it somewhere along the line. I mean, you can easily get it off of almost any search engine, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It's the one that comes up if you type in SIX meters. Just don't use the number, though.
Yeah, Don, we had a opening this morning. Montana was coming in here very strong, 20 over 9 for about 2 hours this morning, and also had a number of VE7s come through in Oregon, Washington stations for a couple hours. So we had some spreadicky going on today already.
And yeah. What frequency do you use? Because I know that there's been talk of being on 50/125, and now they're talking about 52.2. So where is the calling frequency nowadays?
Well, the calling frequency still is 125, but if you jump up and down the band, you'll find a lot of people calling CQ. I mean, they just don't sit on 125 anymore. But like this morning, just before I left about, I'd say 11 o'clock, I got into Colorado on 125, and then up on, I'd say it was 205, had South Dakota in there. So they're all over.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree with Don. 50.125 will continue to be the calling frequency, and then the extremely long-haul DX calling frequency is 50.110. There's been movements off and on for years to go up to 200, but nobody has ever moved. There's all sorts of reasons you don't want to, especially when F-layer comes along. You must stay as low in the bottom of the band as you can for F-layer propagation. Spreadicky, you can go anywhere. You can go up to 52.525 FM and work DX when the spreadicky is in, because it's not as frequency-dependent as F-layer. But as F-layer starts showing up this year and gets better and better over the next 4 years, you will kiss the bottom of 6 meters looking for the real rare stuff.
Okay. All right, Don, well, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
All righty.
Bye-bye.
Okay, I got to do some business. I'm way behind, so hold on here, Will. You're listening to Ham Radio and More. My name is Len Winkler, KB7LPW, and today my guest is Will Anderson, AA6DD, a great call sign. I don't know if it's as good as the professor's AA7A, but it's pretty good, AA6DD. And you must have known the same guy he did to get his call. Anyhow, we're talking about 6 meters today, and our phone number is 602-678-1234. Now, how's that for a slick phone number, huh? 678-1234. Okay, let me tell you about Ken Nichols, WA7HXZ, who is the fleet director of the largest Dodge dealer in the world. Now, not only does, you know, his dealership sell Dodges, but, of course, Kias and Fords and Jeep and Eagle. I mean, they've got almost all the brands you can think of is under one umbrella, Earnhardt here in the Phoenix area. Now, you might laugh or you might say, why should I deal with someone in Phoenix to buy a new vehicle? And I can tell you from buying many vehicles from him and many people that I know have bought many vehicles from him that the reason is simply, well, two things. One, prices can't be beat. He does have the lowest prices. Well, actually, there's three things. One, he has the lowest prices. Two, which doesn't help you a whole lot, is that he has a tremendous inventory here in Arizona. I mean, it's just unbelievable. Of course, if you're in New York and you order one, he's going to have it drop shipped, and you can pick it up at a local dealer near you. And three, it's a pleasure to do business with him. When was the last time you bought a new car and said that you had a pleasure buying a new car? I mean, you know, it just don't happen. But it will happen if you give Ken Nichols, a good friend of mine, a call. Just try it. Don't say, oh, it won't be successful, it won't work, blah, blah, blah. Just give it a try. I mean, I'm telling you, if you buy a new car and you don't give it a try by calling him first, you're doing yourself a disservice. Write down this number, 1-800-497-8740, extension 580. Again, 1-800-497-8740, extension 580. And if you don't want to call them, you can send them email. Ken Carr, K-E-N-C-A-R, Ken Carr, with an S, K-E-N-C-A-R-S at AOL.com. And you can send him email, and certainly he'll go back and forth with you on that. Or you can connect to my homepage, and he's on there, and you can connect directly to him via that, too. But Ken Nichols will get you the best prices on a new vehicle. Give him a call. All right. Let me tell you about W7FG Vintage Manuals. Now, I know we've discussed here today some older radios, and, you know, those are no question that, you know, we're talking about some quality merchandise. But what if you can find this merchandise at a swap meet, but you don't have the manual? You have no idea how to use it. You don't know how to service it. You don't know how to operate it, etc. If you give W7FG Vintage Manuals a phone call, even by email or at their homepage, any of these three things I'll give you, you can get the service manuals, operating manuals, for all these different companies from the old radios at such a low price, it's unbelievable. From companies like Amico, from companies like Bearcat, from companies like B&W, Collins, Hammerlin, Hallicrafters, how about even Keir specs from Ham Key Company? Huh? How's that? How about Heathkit, General Electric, General Radio, FDK, Drake, Dentron, Cushcraft? I mean, the Heathkit alone goes on for pages in this catalog. High Gain, Icom, Hickok, Johnson, Kenwood. There's military radios, National, Motorola, Mosley, Multi, Elmec, MFJ, Micronta, Swan, Tektronix. I mean, I don't think there's Tentec. There's nothing they don't have. RCA, Regency, Santec, and more. Even just getting their catalog, if you're nostalgic, it will bring back memories of some of the greatest radios. And here he has all the vintage manuals you'll ever need. Give W7FG a phone call at 1-800-807-6146. Hey, Will, does that phone number have any significance?
I use their manuals all the time.
Really?
For the price.
Oh, yeah, aren't the prices good?
Yes.
Okay.
And the catalog listing is a superb source for looking for radios, too, because they have Clegg and Gonset and specialized VHF 6-meter and above radios listed as well.
Yes, I mean, there's pages of different radios, and not just radios, but all kinds of receivers and power supplies, all kinds of SWR bridge, amplifiers. It's all in this vintage manual catalog from W7FG. Give him a call, 1-800-807-6146. It's an easy phone number to remember because those are two great tubes from years back. 807-6146, 1-800. And if you want to see them on the Internet, go to www.w7fg.com. Okay? W7FG Vintage Manuals, www.w7fg.com. And give them a call if for nothing else. Get a catalog. Order a catalog from them. Tell them to send you one. You know, you want to get one. It will bring back memories. You'll be happy you made the call. And I'm telling you, Gary's a really nice guy. Okay.
Len, I'm in the process of writing an article for CQ, and I'm not sure when I'll get it done and in there, but I want to make an announcement about the information that'll be in the article in more detail than what I can hear with you. But what it is 6 months ago I started doing an analysis of the sunspot cycle again, and historically, they're very, very hard to predict. And we know that the cycle is not really an 11-year cycle. It's really two 11-year cycles because you have a plus cycle and a minus cycle because the magnetic lines of force reverse on the sunspots. So that means when you look at the data, you really need to put them in pairs. And I was looking at the data, and the problem is which pair to put where. And because I've lived through these last three or four cycles, I kind of know how they pair together. So I started pairing them up, the 21st cycle with the 20th and the 19th with the 18th. And you go all the way back, and all of a sudden a tremendous pattern jumps out at you all the way back to the 10th cycle. Now, when you go back past the 10th cycle, the pairing doesn't work. And, you know, if you go past the first cycle, there was actually a Maunder minimum where there were no sunspots. Hmm. So the global warming is probably a farce. It's probably the sun cooking us and getting hotter, because the sunspot cycles have been getting more and more active from the Maunder minimum some 300 years ago now. But what my calculations show is once you pair them, and then to look at the ratio of the relationship to the pairs, you have you have four rotating vectors. Mathematically, is what they look like. And one vector is twice the size of the other to get the kind of shape that the pairs have. And what this means is that you can, if the phase lock situation of the pairing from the 10th cycle now is to maintain itself, assume it doesn't go, you know, out of sync. It looked like it fell in the sync and it's been in the sync since then. You can predict the odd cycle knowing the even one with a great deal of accuracy. Whereas that means a 24th cycle, I can't tell you anything's going to happen on that one. But if I knew the 24th one, I could tell you the 25th. Well, we know the 22nd. We just lived through it, which means I can tell you with a great percentage of accuracy what the next one we're going to live through in the year 2000 is going to be in 23. And believe it or not, it's going to be the biggest one in all of history.
Whoa.
It's going to go over 205 is the minimum value at an 80% probability rate in my estimation. Its nominal value is 220, and its upper limit is 240. What this means is even if the bottom limit is what's correct, throughout the entire year of the year 2000, 6 meters will become, for the first time in history, the number one DX band from F layer. And 20 meters will be shut down all day long from D layer absorption. 10 meters will be open all night long, every night.
10 meters.
Yes, 10 meters.
Wow.
And it means we'll start seeing it pretty soon. We're still on the bottom, and we're just coming off the edge. But you'll start seeing 10 meters, 10 and 15, really start perking up by September. And by November, there'll be a lot of hot activity on 10. And every once in a while, with tremendous flares, 6 will open on some sort of transequatorial type skip. And then next year, the latter part of a year from now, we will go into that winter and we'll see a lot more 6 meter openings on transequatorial and perhaps even some real F layer here again every time the sun has a blowout. But 2 years from now, all of a sudden, 6 will become the number one DX band because the F layer will be that high. In fact, there'll be so much Channel 2 interference with TV stations interfering with each other. The only way you're going to watch Channel 2 is go to their high-definition TV transmitters at Channel 33 and watch it there.
Okay, now where is this article going to appear?
I haven't. I'm in the process of writing it, and it hasn't been accepted yet, but I'm planning on submitting it to CQ.
Oh, okay. All right, now, I've got to finish these last two spots, so let me do this because I got way behind here.
Go right ahead.
Okay, Amateur Radio Trader Magazine, the Ham Radio Marketplace. If you want to run an ad in Ham Radio, in Amateur Radio Trader, it's amazing. I'll tell you, I have a friend that ran an ad in there, and of course he only had one to sell, and he said that he got like 20 or 30 bona fide calls, people who really wanted to buy it, and you know, for an HT. So let me tell you, this works. Give them a call at 1-800-77-HAM-AD, 1-800-774-2623. You can also get a good subscription. They come out twice a month. It's a great magazine if you're looking to buy something used or if you're buying something new, because all the major manufacturers run ads in there. And also, contrary to popular belief, there's lots of good information. In fact, they have propagation reports in there. I don't know if you've ever seen that, Will, but they do have propagation reports in there. Okay, and the final thing I want to talk about is, again, MFJ Enterprises. And, you know, we're talking about 6 meters. Well, they do have the MFJ 1762. And the 1762 is a three-element 6-meter Yagi. It's only $69.95 or less. And two of them can be stacked, which would double your transmitter ERP and your receive signal over just a single one. It also, it's not too bad. It handles 300 watts PEP, not enough for Will, but for most people. And the driven element uses MFJ's no-tune hairpin impedance matching system. Elements are cut to exact length at the factory. There's no further tuning needed for coverage of the 50 megahertz single sideband portion of the band. And that is the MFJ-1762, a three-element 6-meter Yagi. They also make the MFJ-9606, which is a 6-meter FM transceiver. So that's also a product that you might be interested in. And they also have the mobile antenna that actually works on 2 meters or 6 meters. It's a mag mount. So you can conceivably utilize that too. I'm telling you that MFJ makes so many different products that what you really should do is you should give them a call at 1-800-647-1800. 1-800-647-1800. They'll send you a free catalog. If you don't have an MFJ free catalog, you're missing out, because there's probably enough stuff in here with Ameritron and Mirage and Vectronics, who are all MFJ companies now. There are so many products in here, more than 46 pages worth of them, that it will take you hours and hours to go through all this. 1-800-647-1800. The one thing that I would ask you is, please, when you call my sponsors, and please do call them, mention that you heard about it on the Ham Radio and More show. Now, we do have time to take another phone call if someone wants to give us a call right now at area code 602-678-1234, 602-678-1234. Talk a little about 6 meters. We've heard that there is one repeater from the person that called from Pennsylvania. We really wonder in the New York area if there are any 6-meter repeaters. Oh, one other piece of information that I need to pass along is the FCC now has a brand new number. It's like a catch-all number. And so if you have any questions about anything from the FCC, you call them at 888-225-5322. Again, 888-225-5322.
Okay. The little MFJ beam is small enough, you can rotate it with a regular TV antenna rotator.
Yeah, it's very small. I have one here. It's very small. It's easy to put together, and it's easy to turn. It's very lightweight.
Yeah. I just want to make sure everybody knows that they don't have to buy a very expensive one. They go to Walmart or Radio Shack and use the cheap rotomotors and turn it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, who do we have online?
Hey, Len, Hap Holly, KC9RP in Chicago.
How you doing, Hap?
Fine, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How's our signal hitting the old Windy City?
Oh, WCR sounds fine.
Thank you.
Interesting program, man. A question for your guests. During the last solar maximum in 1989, there were some major, major problems, not just terrestrially with various power grids, but of course with various satellites as well, geosynchronous and otherwise. And I suspect that if we have as high of a peak as you're talking about in 2000, that NASA is and should be very, very concerned.
Well, they have to worry about it because it does knock satellites out. And the worst time period will be the year before and the year after the peak. In other words, solar disturbances are usually the worst on the way up towards the top and on the way down. So the year 1999 is going to be the worst for solar flares, and it means that 6 meters will have a lot of aurora borealis skip to work, and then on the way down in the year 2001, there'll be a tremendous amount of aurora borealis as well as solar flares knocking satellites out. So it's a real problem, and it's going to happen.
Indeed. Well, thank you. Nice to have you on the show, and thanks for having your guest, there, Len.
Thank you very much for calling in, Hap, as always. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Hap Holly, who does RAIN, which you can also hear on the Internet, and, of course, on all over the place. RAIN, Hap Holly, does extensive interviews, and he's been doing it for years, and he does a very good job about it. So I don't know if you're familiar with Hap Holly. Maybe we'll have to do another show with Hap one of these days. I haven't had him on for a couple of years either. I also recommend anybody who has not seen the movie Contact. When I had Dr. Shuck on a few weeks ago regarding SETI, he talked about it. That was one heck of a movie. I did go and see it. Have you seen it, Will?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, you need to go see that movie. I mean, any amateur radio operator should see that movie. It starts out with Jodie Foster being a 9-year-old ham, and it's quite interesting, and obviously it centers about radio signals coming from another planet or another solar system, and what the Earth will do if in fact we do hear something from elsewhere. I wonder how the new sunspot cycle will affect our SETI project.
Well, they're fairly high in frequency. They're way up in the gigacycle.
Sure.
It tends to, when the ionization gets really tight, it'll actually rotate polarizations in the microwave frequencies, but it normally doesn't attenuate it very much. So as long as they use circular polarization, they normally do not have a problem.
Okay. Well, we have probably 2 minutes left, so is there anything in conclusion you want to say, Will, about 6 meters, other than everybody should get on it because it's so great?
Well, it's a wonderful band. You have to be patient, put up a good station. There is a season to Sporadic-E that is our normal meat and potatoes that we operate on the band. It starts peaking in May and goes through August. Then there's another minor peak that's in the wintertime, starts at Thanksgiving and goes through the first couple of weeks of January. And those, it's there day, year in and year out, whether or not we have F-layer. But as the sunspot cycle climbs, we'll start getting F-layer, and F-layer sort of fills in the gap on 6 meters. November is a very hot time period on 6 meters for F-layer. When it gets high enough, we'll have to get over 100 sunspots for it to start really having effect. And also the February, March, April time period then becomes an extremely exciting time period. On F-layer, I have worked hundreds of Japanese stations on those rare, wonderful occasions when the band does open.
Okay, I got to stop you there. I want to thank you very much, Will, AA6DD, for being my guest today on the Ham Radio and More Show. Thanks, Will.
We enjoyed it.
Okay, and everybody else, I want to thank you for listening, and we'll see you again next week, same time, same place. 73, we're QRT.